especially in building software, you want to make sure it's stuff that's validated by the industry first. And so anytime we come up with an idea, we'll go turn to somebody and be like, hey, does this really make sense? And most of the time they're like, oh, that's okay, but this I think would provide a lot of value. So try not to just go build off on our own because we think we're smarter than everyone else. That's not how we do it. We realize that we know how to deliver software. You know how to take care of people. Let's utilize your knowledge base to make the best software possible.
In this fast-moving world, collaboration is key. So how can technologists and treatment providers find new ways to work together toward building a better future for patients? I'm David Kondos, and we'll explore this with software entrepreneurs Steve McCall and Matt Stevens on this episode of Recovery Unscripted.
My father was an addict. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My half-brother and father both committed suicide. So it's about telling them, you know, Miss Tennessee didn't always have a perfect life.
All human pain, no matter who you are, we have one pill to take care of it all. That's insane. We're going to look back in 50 years and think the entire country was deluded to think that that would work.
I'm not just coming at you from a law enforcement side. I come at it because I have a family member who still struggles.
I faced a lot of problems, but one thing I didn't do is give up. That's what I want people to hear is do not ever give up. There's hope out there.
Sharing firsthand stories and expert insights from the front lines of behavioral and mental health care. This is Recovery Unscripted.
In the 5th century BC, a Greek physician named Hippocrates revolutionized Western medicine. To give you an idea of what the medical world was like back in Hippocrates' day, he's largely credited with being the first person in history to argue that diseases originate from biological causes instead of being mystical punishments from the gods. So the fact that the famed Hippocratic Oath, based on his teachings of ethics and professionalism, is still commonly recited at medical school graduations today is pretty astounding. Because our ideas about healthcare have come a long way in the past 2,500 years. But even with all the radical advancements that have been made, some things have been slower to change. For example, throughout almost the entire history of medicine, from the first time Hippocrates taught his students in classical Greece, through the first human anatomy textbooks in 14th century Italy, through the first kidney transplant in 1954, all the records that kept track of how patients felt and how remedies and procedures performed were always kept in the same way, on a solitary physical document. Now, that slowly began to change in 1972, when the first electronic medical record, or EMR, was developed at the Regenstrief Institute in Indiana. These new EMRs and their close relative EHRs, electronic health records, allowed doctors to store and protect all of their patients' medical and health data digitally, thereby increasing communication among care teams and improving patient safety. And just like the breakthroughs Hippocrates made in ancient medicine, making that shift from paper records to digital records was a monumental step forward at the time. But it didn't mean that there wasn't still a long way to go. This is where Steve McCall and Matt Stevens enter this story. The two friends met while studying at Brigham Young University in Utah in the late 2000s, and even though they didn't have any prior training or experience with software development, a mentor's guidance encouraged them to try building an electronic health record platform. And they did, bringing some of the first mobile, GPS-based technology into the home healthcare field, specifically designed for companies that provide caregivers to the elderly. And Steve and Matt not only enjoyed running a business together, but also loved being able to use their skills to keep advancing the way doctors and patients interact with technology. So even after selling their first software company to a larger tech firm, they were eager to get back into that startup life with a new endeavor. They just weren't sure exactly which direction to go next. But when tragedy struck in the life of their friend, it opened their eyes to just how daunting the addiction treatment world can seem for families who never thought they'd need that kind of help. And as Matt explains, that gave Steve and him an idea for how they could put their experience with software to work for the greater good.
We started looking for kind of what our next project might be. And one of Steve and my best friend's son overdosed about 3 days after he had been out of treatment. So Steve and I were at the hospital with the family, trying to help them learn what the different options are, helping them, you know, make decisions. That's when we were really introduced for the first time to the space and saw the good that could happen, the bad, you know, sometimes going into this black hole after treatment. And we thought, hey, maybe we could do some good here with some of the experience and learnings that we had gone through. And that's kind of what brought us here. So really, you know, we're kind of outsiders from the space. We didn't know anyone in the space, didn't know any treatment centers or any people that had worked in the space. We knew technology, we knew healthcare, and we knew that people needed help and that it had touched our lives in a pretty significant way. And so that's kind of what brought us here.
I think one of the other big things too that we looked at in getting into this space is we're passionate about helping people, and this looked like a place where people really needed help. And I think the other thing that we learned from, you know, our friend's overdose is so many people come out of treatment and then they lose that connection to the treatment center. And so how can we help keep people connected in the addiction recovery space with relapse rates that are so high? And that was something else that really got us excited about what we could do here.
As you were hearing all that feedback and how there was a need for this in the recovery side, how did you go about kind of developing Aliva and then launching it a couple years ago?
So much of it is just sitting down in their office and watching process and understanding, you know, why do you do it like that? So we asked a lot, you know, we totally listen. We asked lots of questions. You know, why do you do it that way? Why don't you do this? Most of the time it's like, I do it this way because this is the only way I know how to do it. And looking at that and saying, okay, so this is how you do that specific task. If we did it this way, we could save you this amount of time. Do you think that makes sense? And them coming back and saying, oh yeah, that's awesome, or no, that doesn't make sense. A lot of it was just sit down, watch, listen, provide alternatives, get feedback, and then apply that in the application and see how it worked for them.
We like to think we're pretty smart, but really, when it comes down to it, we just try to be good listeners and kind of, you know, we don't come up with very many ideas ourselves. It's more we have the skill set of listening and understanding how to prioritize, you know, what's most important and what's most valuable, and being able to put the time and effort into building what they need.
Yeah, I know that's like at the company where I work, we have the web team, obviously, who are, you know, creating web applications and websites. And it feels like it's kind of a similar thing because they're, you know, so deep in the weeds and they're such experts at what they're doing. They have a vision of, okay, well, people will do this and then this and this, and this is kind of the journey and this is the user experience. But sometimes, like, when before they launch them, they'll open it up to the rest of us and be like, hey, can you guys test this out? Because you really don't know how people are going to actually use it until you ask them, until you see.
Totally. I think one of the biggest things, and Matt really hit on it, is we don't really try to come out with too many of our own ideas, especially in building software. You want to make sure it's stuff that's validated by the industry first. And so anytime we come up with an idea, we'll go turn to somebody and be like, hey, does this really make sense? And most of the time they're like, oh, that's okay, but this I think would provide a lot of value. So try not to just go build off on our own because we think we're smarter than everyone else. That's not how we do it. We realize that in this space, we know how to deliver software. You know how to take care of people. Let's, you know, utilize your knowledge base to make the best software possible.
I see that you're CEO, Steve, and you're president, Matt. What's kind of the difference between that? Or how did you guys divide that up in that way?
We basically flipped a coin. Matt and I really run the business together. So president and CEO are essentially the same thing. It's a really good partnership. Matt and I essentially are like step for step in everything. So we went to school together. We've lived next door to each other like our entire time since school, which is kind of weird.
So you still live next door to each other?
So I just moved. Last month, which is actually a problem.
You're breaking the bond.
I did.
Our daughters are best friends. Our sons are very close in age. I have one on the way now. And so I've been looking at Steve wondering what's going on, man.
Well, he moved out of the neighborhood, so who knows?
Yeah.
Well, Matt's looking at a place by me now, so,
okay.
You know.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, so we do everything. We're in step in everything, and really we run this business together. It's a partnership to manage
and
everything.
And the other side is Steve runs the product and the technology and the client experience, you know, once they're in the Aliva fold. And I run more of the kind of what you would call the outreach and business development and the marketing side of the business.
One of the things that makes us great is Matt is super strong in areas where I'm really weak. And
Steve
vice versa.
Vice versa. Super strong in areas where I'm really weak. So
looks like it makes a good team, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
We try.
So as Steve and Matt sat in different people's offices and soaked up all the information they could about the addiction treatment field, there was one word that kept coming up related to how practices kept their records. Paper. Even in the year 2017, when they launched Aliva, they found that some providers were still using physical paper records in their office. And for the practices that were using some form of EMR, their digital process often still felt like using paper. For example, if you were working in a doctor's office in the 1960s, when you wanted to look at a patient's record, you'd open a filing cabinet, pull out a folder, select a document, close that filing cabinet, and then go on to open a different folder in a different cabinet. And for the most part, that's how the EMR experience felt, even though the technology was no longer limited by those physical boundaries. When Matt saw that, he knew there had to be a better way.
I'm a nerd. I like Harry Potter. I kind of look at us as, hey, take one piece of paper, write down all the things you need for all these different clients, and then it's gonna magically cut and to all these different flying pieces of paper and fly to these different cabinets. You know, we've tried to reimagine the way that we can do our clinical work in a clinical setting to the way that is most beneficial to the clinicians and to the staff so that they can be focusing on what they do best, which is the patient care. I look at it as when people transition to our software off other softwares or even off paper, it's actually, you know, quite a different way of doing their same, you know, processes than
like
they have
the kind of workflow, the user
workflow. Yeah, it's different. And so we spend a lot of time and energy training and helping them to do it in this way that is different than they're used to, which can be scary sometimes. But in the end, it always seems to be a huge value and benefit.
That's an interesting point, because like 20 years ago, if you were introducing an EMR, you would have been making basically a digital version of the paper. Now you're kind of beyond that.
Yep. It's like the next iteration of a digital version of previous digital versions. You know, what wasn't being utilized before, a huge part of that is the patient interaction. For millennials, right, which is a big population that's being serviced in our industry, they're used to being connected and to have a more free flow of information, right? And the way the EMRs of the past and the systems of the past were built and designed was for the doctors to have the information and then provide care and then, you know, that's it. So we've built tools with technology that we have today with apps and video and different technology available to the patients and to the staff to create a new way to care and to communicate back and forth with patients during care and after care. So we're, as far as I know, the first EMR to really bring the patients in to a collaborative process during the actual care that's being given, not just maybe aftercare.
As you said, you have experience in the home health care and now doing this kind of in behavioral health recovery. What are some like similarities and differences you would say between working in those two fields?
It's very similar from a business perspective. In home health care, a lot of times there are large players, just like in this space. But the majority, it's a very fragmented market, meaning a husband-wife team might have a treatment center that they run that's, you know, six guests, right? That's really all they have. There's a lot of startups coming in that space. And you know, in other industries, having a big corporation can sometimes be a huge advantage. And in this space, I don't necessarily feel that's the case, just like in home healthcare, where when you're trusting your elderly loved one, you know, your mom or your dad, or you're trusting your son or your daughter or your brother or sister to a treatment center, you know, being able to talk to the owner and talk to the person that, you know, runs the center, that is, you know, that this is their livelihood and their business and this is what they're passionate about, sometimes has a much bigger effect on my choice of going with them than, you know, a Walmart. Now, the Walmarts of our industry have some great advantages too that counteract. So I feel like there's a good balance where the large organizations can't stomp out the little guys, but the little guys aren't just killing the larger. I feel like there's a really great balance. It's a very similar to home healthcare.
So that what you were just saying kind of gets back into the outsider element that you were talking about earlier. Could you say a little bit about what it was like coming into the space as an outsider, like maybe some things that surprised you about the recovery world?
A lot of things.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we came in right at the very tail end of all the lab upheaval. We didn't even know that labs were really a big part of treatment when we were initially building our system. That was something that was very shocking. And so kind of trying to navigate, well, oh, I didn't know there was bad players or unethical
people
players.
People taking advantage.
Yeah. How do we navigate that? You know, same thing with even patient brokering and things like that. We didn't know any of that existed. We didn't know that there was problems with that.
I think another thing that was at least interesting for me was breaking into the space. You're kind of in the recovery space or you're not, right? So trying to break down those barriers at the first couple conferences was something I wasn't expecting and pretty challenging.
It's like it was kind of hard for people to recognize that you were a part of this? Or?
Yeah, and just like it's a super tight-knit community. So if you haven't been in the community before, it's really hard to become a part of that community. And I think, you know, the first couple conferences, you know, we're trying to get our name out there. We've got people who have gone through recovery on our team too. But, you know, Matt and myself haven't gone through recovery in specific. We've worked in healthcare. We've had a lot of that experience. But trying to break down that barrier initially was really tough. But as we got to get to know people and people saw that we're really trying to do business on the up and up, more and more people were becoming excited about what we can offer. And so, you know, being able to connect with people and have them help us feel included in their community and start to connect with different softwares or, you know, partners in the space, like, you know, billing companies and billing softwares, really helped us to break down that barrier where now I feel like people look at us as Aliva, we're part of, you know, the community, whereas before we were trying to get into that community.
You're in the club.
Yes, yeah. We're in the club. Yeah. Exactly. Totally how it felt for us at the beginning.
No, I understand. Yeah. I mean, we're sitting here at this conference. It can be intimidating. It's like, you know, 100 plus exhibitors, 1,000 plus people. It's tough to kind of come in and say like, hey, like I'm new here.
Yeah. Let me in. Yeah. I'm the new kid in school.
Yeah, it did take a while. I do feel like there's been a little bit of a shift in some of that feeling like, oh, yeah, you guys can hang out here.
Although Matt and Steve had a lot to learn about many aspects of the addiction treatment world, one area where there was already a lot of overlap with their previous experience was the idea of protecting patient privacy. Since its passage in 1996, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, has enforced clear standards for safeguarding patients' medical information across all fields of healthcare. So when they started Aliva, dealing with HIPAA laws wasn't a surprise. But in practice, it's a lot simpler to conceptualize protecting patient records when they're sitting in a filing cabinet or on a hard drive, instead of being part of an app that people carry around with them in their pockets. So as providers and patients grow increasingly comfortable using mobile tech, the new challenge is finding a way to maintain HIPAA compliance while also providing the seamless, user-friendly digital experience that today's consumers expect.
I think the biggest thing with HIPAA is we want to provide as much information as you can, right? Because taking care of clients is all about getting them whatever they need. And getting that information disseminated across your organization can be really difficult. One of the things we really focus on is making sure that we want everyone to be HIPAA compliant, because we don't want anything to happen to any business where they have to shut down, where they get fined. And so our whole focus, anytime we're building stuff, the very first thing from a software perspective is how do we make this aspect HIPAA compliant? One of the things that we've built into the application is what we call Aliva Presence. It's HIPAA compliant video conferencing.
Okay.
One of the things in the space is people will use FaceTime, they'll use Skype, and they'll do these different video calls with people and they're not HIPAA compliant. And we realize, hey, that's a challenge. Because they need to do that. And sometimes your very first interaction with a potential client or family member is via that FaceTime or that Skype. So we said, how can we solve this within HIPAA and when and built that application.
And so that's a way for people to interact with like potential patients?
Totally. So they can come, they can do like admission screenings, they can do, you know, any screenings they want to face to face, or if they're doing therapy sessions with family members, they can actually use our app, and it's got the HIPAA compliant video conferencing. Everything falls in line with those requirements, and they can now take family members, take other people, and make them a part of the treatment that we're doing.
How did you make the video HIPAA compliant? That may be a stupid question.
Yeah, so it's just how you house the data. And so we went and worked with software that's done it in the past and built that solution and integrated it into our software platform, where now it's not like Skype, it's not like FaceTime. Everything conforms to the rules, and we're not saving it in some server somewhere else, right? It's all saved within the application.
Yeah, so kind of taking that conversation, the next step, how do you see technology moving forward? How do you see it affecting this industry over the next couple of years in the future?
I know this has been a theme. I'm sure your listeners have learned a lot more about home health than they wanted to, but it's our experience. And, you know, in that industry, they introduced a star rating system. And what that was is basically was outcomes, and based on your outcome results would dictate the reimbursement level that you would receive reimbursement for treatment. So if you were getting good outcomes, you would receive higher reimbursement than someone who was getting worse outcomes. What it did is it shut down a lot of poor outcome shops. Being able to track those outcomes, being able to provide the efficiency and reporting and data needed to make those business decisions to help you continue to drive towards better outcomes is something that we at Aliva are heavily investing in and planning on, because we feel that this industry, it's very similar when we first entered the home care industry. It's kind of like the Wild West a little bit. That's how this industry feels to us a little bit. And we see that this type of similar transition that happened in the home healthcare industry is going to happen in this industry. And technology is going to be a huge driving factor in the ability to stay ahead and on top of those changing regulations and how it'll affect reimbursement and how it'll affect your business. And so we're investing heavily in that, knowing that that's still probably 3, maybe 4 years away. We're investing heavily in that today to be able to be ready for that for our customers, because that's where we believe it's going.
The thing that Matt alluded to too is data is going to be king, right? And so if you can extrapolate data and start to understand trends in how you're providing your care, that's what's going to help you get to the next level of providing better outcomes for individuals. Because all of us are in this space to help people get better, right? We want to help people get better. And I think providing the tools and the data and the analytics to understand when people are getting better or when people are going to have a relapse episode is going to be incredibly valuable going forward.
Steve McCall and Matt Stevens are the co-founders of Aliva, which provides electronic health records for the behavioral health industry. To check out a demo of their software, visit their website at alivasoft.com. You might even be able to catch them in person at a behavioral health conference near you. Just look for their trademark bright orange polo shirts, which they were both wearing during our interview.
Yeah, so I bought about 30 of these at an Under Armour outlet. I thought they popped.
As always, this podcast is powered by Foundations Recovery Network and produced, written, and edited by me, David Kondos. If you have a second, please rate Recovery Unscripted on your podcast app and leave a comment so I can hear your thoughts about the show. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you right back here for the next episode of Recovery Unscripted.